We are so close. Are you excited?
Yeah.
So am I. So am I. Look what we have before us. We have a holiday coming up. A holiday where we will all gather together and celebrate the resurrection of our King. And to top that off, we're going to have a number of guests that will join us that Sunday. And they will celebrate side to side, shoulder to shoulder with all of us. You know, we've been preparing this month so that our guests that Sunday will be greeted warmly. They will be greeted by members of an upside down kingdom. They will be greeted by upside down citizens. We hope that morning that they will encounter a great surprise, that they'll come expecting one thing. But they'll be surprised and shocked because what they will find is a group of people who seek God's will, not our own agendas. Hopefully what they'll find is a group of people who are not caught up in their own traditions, but rather a group of people who simply seeks to glorify God. A group of people that go beyond the surface level social graces. And they actually care deep down about people's hearts. That sounds like a nice place to be, doesn't it? I think I'd like to go to church there. How about you guys? I think we can be that. I do. Otherwise, I wouldn't have spent these last weeks preparing us for this. I believe we can be there. And it simply takes each of us making and committing to a decision to living as upside-down citizens of an upside-down kingdom. Now, so far this month, we've looked at the idea of religion, of regulations, of rules, and we turned that upside down. Last week, we looked at sinners, right? That church word. And we turned that upside down. There's a different way of looking at that. There's an upside-down way, a kingdom way. Now today is a fun topic. I tell you what, if you take this topic seriously this morning, it truly will turn your world upside down. See, there's an event in the gospel stories. There's an event that happens that Jesus comments on. And Jesus said that wherever the gospel is preached, this event, this story will be shared alongside it. Now that sounds to me like it's a pretty important story. Would you guys agree? Jesus saying, anywhere my story goes, this story is going to be right there with it. Well, turn in your Bibles to Mark chapter 14. If you find your New Testament, it is the second book in the New Testament. Find big old Matthew, and then Mark is the second book there. Mark chapter 14. I'm just going to read this story to you here. This is starting in verse 1 of chapter 14. I like that sound of turning pages. That's nice. Chapter 14 of Mark's Gospel. It says, now the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread were only 2 days away. And the chief priests and the teachers of the law were looking for some sly way to arrest Jesus and kill him. But not during the feast, they said, or the people may riot. While he was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of a man known as Simon the leper, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume made of pure nard. She broke the jar over his head. No. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. Some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages and the money given to the poor. And they rebuked her harshly. Leave her alone, said Jesus. Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want. but you will not always have me. She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. I tell you the truth, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. This story, this event, Jesus felt was so important to say that wherever, and he goes so far as saying wherever in the world, the gospel of good news is preached. Wherever in the world, what this woman has done will be preached alongside it. In remembrance of her. So this woman brings an alabaster jar of pure nard. Okay? Not the cheap imitation nard. Okay? This isn't the knockoff brand. And this isn't even nard mixed with other things, which is a popular thing that would happen. And that would still be a very expensive perfume, but nowhere near what this was. Pure nard. Very expensive perfume, worth a great deal, about a year's wages. Can you imagine watching a woman go through a $35,000 jar of perfume in just minutes? Can you imagine being present and watching that happen and knowing the value? And she just poured $35,000 worth of perfume over Jesus' head and onto his body. It's not like she just donated 350 $100 bills to the ministry that could be used. It was $35,000 worth of perfume. Once it was poured out, there was no reusing it. There was no way of redirecting her gift. There was no way of recycling this gift. It was used and it was gone. I think a lot of us would have reacted the same way the disciples did. I think our jaws would have dropped and we would have thought, what a waste! But how does Jesus view this? He says, it is a beautiful thing that she has done. Now, I'm sure the smell of that beautiful fragrance would have just filled the room, filled the house. It would have been beautiful and very strong. We're talking about a whole alabaster jar. Now, some of you have had, or some of you have, teenagers in your house. And on the night of homecoming dance, or on the night of prom, they tend to overuse cologne and perfume just a little bit. Right? I mean, it's just ever so slightly. I mean, it's like they're thinking, if 10 little squirts of the mist will work for every day, 2 tablespoons should be the amount for a special event. Right? Now, if you would, take that idea, take that cloud of cologne or perfume that creates that dense fog of teenager in your house during those events, okay? And then we'll use some scientific notation, okay? We'll use the power of 10. We'll look smart this morning. We'll just throw a number on there. That is actually a huge number, okay? And then we have some idea of the potency. Hey, that's good for them. Those of you listening on the internet, we just had a baby burp. So we have an idea of the potency. If we imagine this cloud of cologne from your teenagers, times this enormous power of 10, and that would be the power of this smell. It's not a smell that would soon go away. And it was all over Jesus' hair and all over Jesus' body. It was all in his clothes. So is Jesus saying that this is beautiful simply because the smell now filled the room or smell that potent filled the house or the neighborhood? Is Jesus saying that that's what makes us beautiful? Because it was an over-the-top gift? Or is it something more? Well, in those days, you would cover a dead body with perfumes. And you would fill the tomb with sweet-smelling things. So that the smell of the decaying body wouldn't be as prominent. Now, after a body decayed in the tomb, you would go back into the tomb and you would recover the bones. You'd put them in a stone box or a wooden box called an ossuary, and that's where the bones would stay. Jesus is saying that she is preparing him for his burial. That this perfume is for his soon-to-be decaying body in the eyes of a normal death. Jesus knows how close the time of his death is. But did she? Is that why she was there? Is that why she was anointing him? What was going on through her mind? I don't think she interrupted this dinner to prematurely start Jesus' burial. That would be kind of rude. Even the disciples were shocked when Jesus was arrested and crucified. Despite Jesus' many warnings, I don't believe anyone who was close to him at that time really expected Jesus to die and be buried. This was Jesus, God's Son, the promised Messiah, the man who could just speak to a storm and calm it down. The man who had the ability to reverse irreversible diseases like leprosy. The man who had authority over demons. The man who himself had brought others back from the dead. Surely death wouldn't be a challenge for him. Not this superhero. So what was she thinking? What was she thinking if it wasn't about that? I think it's really simple. I think Jesus just meant that much to her. I think she just loved Jesus that much, so much. She was just looking around to find that the most precious thing she had to give to him, to pour out on him. This story is about devotion. And I think that is why it is so important to Jesus that this story should be told alongside the gospel story. Because it is this level of devotion that is necessary for true disciples, true citizens of the upside-down kingdom. This depth of love, this intensity of action. She didn't hold back. This level of a devotion holds nothing back. She didn't just pour some of the perfume on him and then put the cork back in the bottle. No. What did she do? She broke the jar. There was no turning back from that point. There was no jar to put the leftover perfume in because she didn't plan on having leftover perfume. She broke the jar and there was no turning back. And Jesus says something very simple. It's easy to read over in that passage. He says, she did what she could. What an awesome compliment. I'd love to hear those words from Jesus myself. Dusty did what he could. Because that would mean that when all was said and done, that I had lived up to the full potential of what God had given me, that I had lived up to 100% of what God wanted from me. She gave 100% of herself. She gave full devotion. This story draws a line in the sand for me. When I read this story, it asks me to choose one side or the other. See, I'm either going to share in the attitude of the complaining disciples, or I'm going to be breaking my own personal alabaster jar and giving over my full devotion. How many of us sit on the sidelines? We sit on the sidelines of this upside-down kingdom. And our only contributions are complaint after complaint. We point fingers, we criticize, we critique. We talk about how others should be doing things in their ministry area. Of course, we do so behind their back so they won't be hurt. What good does this do? What good does this do any of us? Much less the upside-down kingdom. Dream with me. Dream with me, if you would. Go here. What would happen if we could take each and every one of our personal alabaster jars and just break them and pour them out over Jesus' head? If we could just pour out in excess for the upside-down kingdom. If we would just pour out our emotions, our passions, our thinking, our identity, our pride, our whole self, we would just pour ourselves out over Jesus. If we just fall at His feet and say, Jesus, You've got all of me, 100%. You have my full devotion. You have everything that I am, from my most insignificant parts all the way to the parts that I value about myself the most. See, days after this event happened, we have the Easter story. We find Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, emotionally struggling with the task of the cross lying before Him. Chances are, He could still smell this extravagant gift. It was in His hair. It had soaked into the fabric of His cloak. It had soaked into the pores of His skin. The fragrance of that gift probably followed Him through the trials that night. And as the disciples deserted Him and they scattered, this aroma was with Him. This aroma probably followed Him through the beatings and as He hung on the cross for mankind. That smell, though possibly faint by then, may have still been lingering. That smell. You know, as the Roman guards, the Roman centurions cast lots for His clothes. His clothes probably smelled of this pure nard, this expensive perfume. This perfume, this gift that said, I will not hold back. I will give You everything. I will give You 100%. I will give You my life. Isn't that what Jesus communicated to us from the cross? I will not hold back. I love You so much. I will give You my all. I will give You 100%. I give You my whole devotion. I give You my life. Days before that event, this act of love, this act of devotion by this woman was only a shadow of the love and devotion that carried Jesus to the cross. That perfume that was poured out by this woman, that beautiful gift, was only a shadow of the beautiful gift of Jesus' blood that would be poured out for mankind. This devotion, this passion took Jesus to the cross. And Jesus asks for nothing less from each of us. Our devotion must follow in the footsteps of the one we call our Lord. And that's why I believe that Jesus said, wherever the gospel story is told, wherever in the world, this story will be told with it. Because if you are going to join this kingdom, if you are going to join the upside-down kingdom, if you're going to become a disciple of Christ, if you're going to claim that you died in Christian baptism and rose anew by the power of God, then this is the level of devotion that is expected of each of us, holding nothing back. You know that moment in history when the world turned upside down, Jesus died on the cross and he was buried. You know, I don't think this woman was left with thoughts like, I wish I would have told him how much he meant to me. I wish I would have told him how much I loved him. I don't think she was left with those thoughts. You know what she was left with? She was left with a broken alabaster jar and no regrets. In the world of military aviation, there's a term that captures the idea of going all out. No holds barred, holding nothing back. See, in a fighter plane, there used to be control sticks that were topped with ball-shaped grips. Some of these controllers were called the throttles. And in a fighter plane, you would use these. And you would push these sticks forward. And when you would give full throttle, those sticks would be up against the firewall of the airplane, the wall that would separate the cockpit from the engine. So in order to get maximum power, maximum effort, maximum speed, maximum efficiency, to go all out in this airplane, in this fighter jet, you would push those sticks forward so that the ball end of those sticks would touch the firewall of that airplane. And so was born a term that many of us don't know the story behind. A term you might be shocked to hear in church. The term is going balls to the wall. And that's where it comes from. Church, what if we applied this term to our faith? What if we applied it to our devotion? What if we lived with broken alabaster jars and no regrets? What if we lived a life in such a way that we just went full throttle forward? Think about what God could do with a church that would be that devoted. Now, as I'm speaking, there are many of you here who have your own personal alabaster jars. You're gripping them tight with nervous hands and white knuckles because what you're thinking is you're thinking, I think I'm crazy enough to do it. I think I want to do this. I think I want to go all out. I think I want to go full throttle. But how do we do so now? How do we imitate the action of this woman? Jesus isn't here. How do we pour our perfume on Jesus if he is not physically here? Well, in this passage, Jesus states that his physical presence on earth would only last for a short time. But he said, the poor you will have with you always. In Matthew chapter 25, Jesus talks about the day of his second coming, when Jesus returns to take home the faithful and the devoted. He says, when the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels are gathered with him, he'll be seated on his throne in heavenly glory. And the nations will be gathered before him. And he will separate the people as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll place the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will turn to those on his right. He said, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, which was prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I was without clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or without clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to visit you? And the king will tell them, I tell you the truth. What you did for the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. Then he will turn to those on his left. And he will say, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you didn't invite me in. I was without clothes, and you didn't clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you didn't care for me. And they too will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or in need of clothes? When did we see you sick or in prison and we did not help you? And he will say to them, I tell you the truth. What you did not do for the least of these, you did not do for me. Then they will go away to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life. What would it be like if we had a church of people that just showered others with this tangible love, with a love that reached out and offered help to those who were in need, with a love that reached out to lonely people and gave them company, with a love that reached out to the down and out and lifted them up, and that not because they did so because there was some church program, but because this was a lifestyle of every member of this church body. Imagine that with me. Dream with me. Dream with Jesus, because I believe that's what he wants out of his people. Full devotion. This kind of love. You know, what you pour out on others, you are pouring out on Jesus. How upside down is that? I mean, what you pour out on the least of these, on the lowest, on the smallest person, on the person that stands on the lowest rung on the ladder of life, what you pour on them, you're pouring on Jesus. That's upside down. Loving others with this level of devotion is upside down. Pull out your spoons today. You look in front of you in your little pew pockets there, and you got spoons. We've been using these all month. We've been learning all sorts of lessons from these. Last week we made faces in them. That was kind of fun. Too bad if you missed out. This week I want you to turn around to the back side of the spoon, the side of the spoon where everything is right side up. Now, spoons were made with a certain purpose in mind, correct? They're made to scoop things up, get them to your mouth. Bigger the spoon, the better. Right? Now, if you look at this side of the spoon, the side of the spoon that everything is right side up, you're looking at the useless side of the spoon. You can't scoop up much with that side of the spoon. I certainly wouldn't want to try to eat a bowl of soup with that side of the spoon. Be a good weight loss program. I want you to turn your spoon around. Whoa, everything's upside down. That's the upside down kingdom you're looking at. You're looking at the useful side of the spoon. You're looking at the side of the spoon that does what it was intended to do. It's all right. That's expected. I guess we could all time it. We could all count down 3, 2, 1 and put them all back at one time. You know, what if we did bring this kind of love out What if people did see this kind of love just pouring out of the people that attended church here? I mean, at first they'd be skeptical, wouldn't they? People wouldn't trust that kind of love. They'd think there was something up. Think they're after something. And of course, it's church. So they'd be like, they're after my money. We covered that last week. Of course, we'd have to be wary. We'd have to be wise. Because there are some that would take advantage of this kind of love. Jesus said, don't throw your pearls before swine. He said, be wise. He didn't say, keep your pearls all to yourself. But he did say, you need to be wise. So we'd have to be wary. So those are two things we could expect. But what about when people finally start taking us seriously? Real needs are being met by real love. And we're doing so. And they're seeing that. You know, loving others with this intensity communicates the authenticity of the gospel in ways that words will never be able to match. If we lived like this, what would that say about our faith? Or at least the faith that we claim? See, today's challenge is tough. It's tough. As I said, when I read this story, it draws a line in the sand. And it says, Dusty, you're one side or the other. You're either a complaining disciple, complaining about the wastefulness of this extravagance, or you're a person standing there with a broken alabaster jar who is just given to Jesus in whole devotion. Who are we going to be today? Each of us have that decision to make. Are we going to be complaining disciples? Or are we going to get caught with a broken alabaster jar and no regrets? Are the people out there going to get loved in such a way that we are telling them, I love you because I'm so much in love with this man named Jesus that my devotion to him outpours love to you. If that's how you want to live, then this morning is a decision for you to make. If you've been a Christian and you haven't been living that way, right now is the time to decide, I'm breaking my alabaster jars. Maybe you broke them at one time in your life, and since then you've built them back up. It's time to break them again, people. It's time to pour out everything to Jesus.